This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Also on Friday in Seattle, the Crab Five, the highest scoring starting five in the country. Maryland is in, and keep an eye on Big Ten Freshman of the Year, Derek Queen, who leads them in scoring and rebounds. Great season from the Terps, and they will face Grand Canyon.
Whoa.
The Antelopes are in high gear under tournament legend Bryce Drew, third straight tournament out of the WAC.
So there's the announcement that occurred around 6:30 yesterday as Maryland was in the last bracket, the West, of the four seed, taking on Grand Canyon, who finished 26-7. We know where they'll be. They do have to go out to Seattle, and then if they were to win their first two games on to San Francisco, you wonder about the travel there. But Maryland did stay on that four line, and they get started on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, look... I think they got hosed. I think the Big Ten took care of some schools. We saw teams get rewarded for losing earlier in the conference tournament than others. I don't think the Big Ten fights particularly hard for Maryland. I don't think the Big Ten put up much of a fight about the committee blatantly violating their rules, which is... These regions are supposed to mean a little something-something, and the goal is to have teams, especially quality teams, play closer to home than not. And this is supposed to be a weekend tournament. This isn't supposed to be a two-week road trip. When you send a team from College Park, Maryland, to Seattle, and then if they win, go play the best team in the country right now, Florida, who didn't have to travel in the first round, in San Francisco... I just don't see how that makes sense. I don't see how it makes common sense, logistical sense, competitive balance sense. This time of year, you're not supposed to be packing for 2 weeks on the road, but with back-to-back 6-plus-hour flights, and that doesn't include loading and unloading planes, loading and unloading buses, both at the airport and at the team hotel or back at the dorms. That's a tall order. That's a tough task.
What's even more confusing about the travel is Maryland is the higher overall seed, the four seed, than Arizona. And Arizona's in the East. And Maryland's
that's the one that makes no sense. You could just flip
explain
those.
That to me.
Put Arizona in the West, put Maryland in the East. That seems pretty
easy fix.
But that's why I tell you, the human element in this, the politics in this, matter immensely. And there are people trading, they're horse trading this for that, my conference for your conference, my buddy who's the AD at this school, and your buddy who's the AD there. There's zero transparency here.
Yeah, but what's explain Carolina. The Arizona part of it. Like, Arizona's a school that's won national championships. They are a well-respected program, and this is, it seems like it lacks common sense that those two schools aren't just flip-flop. Like, why is Arizona, put Arizona in the West, put Maryland in the East, and bing, bam, boom, you're done.
Again, I don't know, but I do know that you could probably only call in so many favors, and they probably only want to tear their thing up so many times. And Purdue got damn well taken care of. And most teams in the Big Ten, I think, got damn well taken care of.
I thought Michigan got slighted. I mean, them winning
a five seed?
I told you guys, the conference tournament.
Yeah, it was irrelevant.
It was done before. It was done before their outcome Saturday, let alone their outcome Sunday. That's just the world we're living in with the conference tournaments, especially the ones that want to keep playing on a Sunday. Like, that's why I told you I'd do away with them for the big conferences. I think they're increasingly irrelevant. Yeah. But you find me another team. It's not like you're playing in Denver and then San Francisco. It's not like you're playing in St. Louis and then San Francisco. That's crazy to me that you're going to send a group of kids to Seattle and San Francisco back to back.
I'll say this, though. I hate where they are. I don't hate the draw.
I don't like facing the best team in the country in the Sweet 16. That's just me.
But let's get to the Sweet 16. That's fine. If you get there, I'll take my shot. I've watched Maryland all year. Nobody blows them out. They'll be in the game. I'll take my chances with Florida in the Sweet 16. Like, as a four seed, you're going to have to play a one seed in the Sweet 16. So I'll take my chances. But I don't mind their draw the first two rounds.
Yeah, and you're facing Memphis being the weakest five seed, where Colorado State's favored over Memphis. So you could play double-digit seeds back-to-back to get to the Sweet 16, much like they did 10 years ago in their last Sweet 16.
How did this team handle 8 days in the Pacific Northwest not that long ago?
Yeah, but that was a little different. There's a lot more on the line than going to Oregon and Washington.
I understand that. I understand that. But that's an unnecessary hurdle.
It's they'll get over it.
To do that to a three seed, I think, is ridiculous.
Oh, they're four seed. Four.
They should be a three.
But they're not. They're
right. Four, yeah. Slight one. And they sent them out west.
If they would have beaten Michigan,
and they sent them to a pod in Seattle before San Francisco to face a one seed that's staying, you know, a bus ride from home.
Yeah. Well, they got to get there, but yes.
Okay.
They got to get there. I'm with you on the travel, but and
it's a big deal.
Beltway Ben, are you? How do you feel about the draw itself?
I did not want to see Grand Canyon. I've watched a lot of Grand Canyon this year. They're good. I think the Terps shoot the ball better, and they should win. But the second round is as good as it can get. And I also think Florida's going to travel. They're going to go to Raleigh, and they're going to have to come across where the Terps are already there. Hopefully that gives you a little bit more of an advantage, because Florida's still going to have to go out there and get used to the time change and everything like that.
By the way, I just want to point out, because you and you were talking sales guy Max, who's a big basketball, you guys think Florida's going to get beat. Ben,
I just think Florida's a little bit overrated right now. They're overhyped. Everybody's on their boat right now. And usually when the tournament comes around, when everybody is on them, that team usually falls.
I think Florida's winning the national title.
I don't.
They could.
I don't.
They could. I think I did in one of my brackets. I got them winning. I think I have Houston in the other. But alas, nobody gives a damn about my brackets. But Maryland playing Friday at 4:30. That means pregame coverage 3:30 here on 105.7 The Fan on Friday, which means a short show for us on Friday. But Terps know where they're going. I'm curious when they're going to head out there. Do they get out ahead of time just to get used to the time change? What do they do?
Yeah. You got a plan on being out there for 2 weeks. Yeah. How early you want to go?
Well, you don't go the day before.
No, they won't let you. You got to be there 48 hours before to start doing media and all that.
Yeah.
Which is also why I don't know how the hell you could possibly turn around and come home.
I think they stay.
Else is doing that?
I don't know.
I'm betting nobody in the country is planning on staying 5,000 miles away from home through the first two weekends of the tournament.
I bet you they'll have great accommodations.
I, I bet they will. I bet it's not as good as home.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It's not as good as a 45-minute flight to Providence and then maybe going out to San Francisco.
Yeah, hotels sometimes are nicer
than
dorms.
It's not as good as a 30-minute flight to Raleigh and then maybe having to go to San Francisco.
We have a huge Monday show. As you see, Jason not happy, but we got a lot to get to. By the way, he'll be very happy about something the Ravens did. We'll get to that. But guest-wise on today's show, we get started. Our friend Jonah Schaefer covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. We'll talk to him at 4 o'clock. They've signed a backup quarterback. We'll get his thoughts on that and much more. What about the future of Mark Andrews? That's it for Mark Viviano. We'll check in with him, conscious of the show, IA Hall of Famer, 4:30. Jonas, IA Hall of Famer as well. Well, big Hall of Fame day. Jacob Calvin Meyer covers the Orioles for the Baltimore Sun. IA
Hall
of Famer.
Might be a record Hall of Famer.
At 5 o'clock.
Hall of Famer Sunshine was just in the studio.
Yeah, Jimmy Sunshine Patsos was on before us. And then Gene Wong covers the Terps for the Washington Post. We'll get his thoughts on where they're going, their draw. Gene joins us at 5:30.
Yeah, a lot to unpack here. The Orioles continue to creep closer to opening day. Gunnar Henderson doing a little bit more. Jorge Mateo got in a game. Suarez looked great. Dominguez and some other guys in the bullpen, not so much.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Jackson Holliday's looking
damn
good.
Jackson Holliday looks really good. We'll touch on some of that today and obviously throughout the week. I love the Cooper Rush signing. I was politicking for it last week. Good on the Ravens for spending on a backup quarterback. A busy, busy time of year.
By the way, and you used to lament this as well back in your day as an insider, like the glad handing for the agents, that deal was announced, a 2-year, $12 million deal. He's getting $3 million.
Yeah.
Like he's getting $3 million.
Getting $3 million.
Yeah. So, we're getting a little crazy. Anyway, coming up next, Terps, Big Ten Tournament, the good against Illinois, and then the bad against Michigan. We recap next here on The Fan.
Don't let Donaldson get it back now if he throws it in. There they go.
Get it in. Donaldson.
9 seconds. 2 seconds. Donaldson at the buzzer. He wins it.
1 second left. Less than one.
You can't let him get it back.
You called it, Raf.
Trey Donaldson goes end to end to put Michigan in front.
And he was the only guy on the court that could do that for Michigan.
Game was hurt right here on 105.7 The Fan, but Bill Raftery called it before the ball was even inbounded. Him and Grant Hill and Ian Eagle on the call on CBS. You can't let Trey Donaldson get the ball back, and that's exactly what happened. He inbounded. They gave it right to him. And flashbacks of Tyus Edney. And UCLA went on to win the national championship after beating Missouri, I think, in the second round on a very, very similar play. You got to stop the ball.
If you're going to press, if you're going to have people up court, then they better deny something.
Yeah, they denied nothing and then let the guy go all the way down the court. That was an absolute disaster of a play there at the end, which kind of overshadows the fact that Maryland was, frankly, embarrassing on the boards in that game Saturday. They got out-rebounded 47-18. They had 18 rebounds in a 40-minute game. And what was interesting, Kevin Willard, and we'll get to him in a minute, but talked about how the guards have to help out. And if you watched any of that game yesterday, Wisconsin's guards were really rebounding in that game. You have to, because Michigan's got those two bigs. It was a disaster for Maryland on the glass, and yet they still had a chance to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, look, they got killed on the glass. Jacoby Gillespie did not have a great game by any stretch of the imagination. Rodney Rice went from the most unstoppable scoring force on the planet against the Fighting Illini to barely seeing the ball.
He didn't hit a shot in the first half.
I mean, he didn't even run, but it's not like he was firing and missing. It was like he was conspicuously absent from the offense, which, again, I did not like what I saw out of the point guard. And for him to not be as good as the Michigan kid, especially late, and for you to get destroyed on the boards and for you to still have won the game, is kind of crazy. And it does speak to their overall acumen, but Derek Queen was a dominant force offensively, and Miguel did his thing in some key spots and gave them some instant offense, and they turned Michigan over a ton like we knew they would,
because that's what they do,
and that kept them in the game. But it had a lot of hallmarks of when they haven't met the moment. Close and late situations, a little over their head. Letting a lesser team, a less athletic team, dictate pace and tempo and style of play to you. When if your five can run those guys, you could have run them out of the gym. You just did it in Ann Arbor a little over a week ago. And slow starts. And for as much as that wasn't an issue against Illinois coming off extreme rest, this was another sort of helter-skelter first half.
Totally. And then it looked like you were going to get ran out of the gym when that second half started, and they went on an 11-0 run. Yeah. They pushed that lead to 15, and Wolf and Golden killed them, and they got destroyed on the glass. But you said it, Jason, the equalizer in it was the 19 turnovers, and that's been Michigan's Achilles heel all year long. Terp scored 29 points off those turnovers, and it's really a shame for how they battled back, man. And they were kept taking some body blows from Michigan, but they kept fighting. Queen was fantastic, and hitting those two clutch free throws prior to the buzzer beater was massive as well.
Let me just say this. He was incredible on offense.
Yes.
Him and Reese were at time, to me, they lacked effort on the defensive boards, on the defensive side of the ball. Yeah. There were a couple times where they should have gotten rebounds. Yeah. They didn't have the want to at times to go after the basketball. It was kind of weird. I will say this, and you're absolutely right about some of their late and close, but until they blew that last play, they did play the end really well. They got Gillespie hits Reese for the layup. They foul the right guy.
Yep.
He misses the front end. I don't know why the guys guarding Queen so close up high, but they got the lead with 5 seconds left, and then they blow it because you let that guy.
They manage the timeouts well.
Yeah, like if that guy hits a deep three and beats you again, like we saw against Michigan State, you okay? But you can't let the guy go the length of the damn court and hit a layup.
Yeah. Look, the kid also got loose off a screen for a three. Yes. And Jacoby was in no man's land. Like, their point guard took over the game.
Yeah, trying
Our
to go
point
under.
Guard did not.
Yeah, Donaldson had, in that game, had 12 points and 9 assists.
And they were almost all late.
Yeah. So Maryland loses 81-80. Michigan goes on to win the Big Ten tournament. Credit to them, because they were disastrous going into this, and they end up winning the whole damn thing. Let's go back to Friday night.
Unbelievable.
Maryland... They're up 26 at the half. They go on to beat Illinois 88-65 in a game that wasn't that close. They had 80, I think, with 10 minutes left.
Oh, they could have scored 110 if they wanted to.
This was, and I guess you could say Illinois is a bad matchup. We were talking about Ivicic, the big. He had three fouls, like, bing. So he's sitting, then he immediately gets his fourth. It was one-way traffic Friday night.
That's one other thing, just going back to Michigan real quick. When you start to get Golden in foul trouble, why are you not now becoming a dribble drive penetrate team? I kept waiting for somebody to run at this guy. You could have ran him right off the court. You saw what their backups look like. When he wasn't on the court, it was the men against the boys, pretty much.
Yeah.
But there was no intent. I put a lot of that on Jacoby.
They got a foul on each of them the first minute of the game. And then Golden finished with four, Wolf with three, but they stayed out of foul trouble, basically.
Golden was the guy.
Yep.
And you had him on the ropes. And when he comes back in after having to sit early in foul trouble, I just kept waiting between Rodney or Jacoby, somebody take it to this guy.
And that's kind of what they did with Ivicic, you know, with picking up those fouls early, and then they were just able to dominate. But I think that's one thing. If you're looking glass half full, we're wondering how they would do with that long layoff. Well, they just dropped 57 points in the first half, and it was total one-way traffic. Where that Ohio State game, the first one, you thought that was the most dominant first half you've seen, and then hold my beer. Look at that, 57.
So Maryland, they beat Illinois. They lose to Michigan. Kevin Willard talks about trying to flush the Michigan loss and looks forward to the tournament.
It got flushed at 5 o'clock. I haven't slept yet, and it was hard because it's our fourth one in a row the way we've lost. I'd almost rather get blown out, to be honest with you, to fight back from being down 15 to take the lead and then obviously have some defensive breakdowns at the end. But as my wife said, she goes, you know, once 5 o'clock, you got to recognize and you got to be ready to be excited about the second season. And 5 o'clock hit, I let it go. I'm super excited now, and I'm excited about this team. I'm excited about going out west. I think it's, you know, we've done it once before, so I'm excited to get back out there again.
Kevin Willard, very excited. By the way, to his point,
I hope he's excited to stay out there for a while again.
Hey, like, say, Seattle's got some good restaurants. He brings up them being down 15. Michigan went on a 7-0 run at the end of the first half and then started the second half on an 8-0 run. So that's a total of 15-0. Maryland cut it to 6, and then Michigan went up, I think, 15, as he said, 15, and they were able to take the lead, which is pretty incredible.
Well, it felt like they went on that 11-0 run like nothing.
Yeah.
They can turn it on and turn it off. And is anybody else surprised about the personnel usage in the first half of that game, especially when your starters only had to play 25 minutes against Illinois?
Yeah, going to the bench that early, because it played out.
He talked about it during one of the timeouts. I don't know that I agree with it, but he's like, I'm just trying to get bursts.
I heard that, and I'm still like, what? You just saw what your five could do to these guys in their backyard a week ago.
Yeah.
They couldn't handle the starting five. And you got people off their feet the night before, and that's your first game in 6 days.
Yeah.
I was really surprised by the substitution patterns in the first half of that game.
And to your point, Maryland was up 7. Queen, basically the ball goes all the way down almost on a corner 3 and then pops out, which would have put them up 10. And instead you blink and they're down. Like, Maryland had a chance to take over that game early in the first half.
I mean, Rodney Rice clearly loved the rims and every look he got the night before. How you're subbing people off before Rodney Rice has attempted 3-4, at least a couple, 2 or 3 threes. That's I was like, we're not running any place. We're not running screens for Rodney Rice from where he likes it on the wing just for bleeps and giggles because he couldn't miss here last night.
To your point, Rodney Rice took 9 shots Saturday.
Yeah, 9. 4 in the first half.
I'm saying, but I mean, he should have had 4 in the first 10 minutes of that game.
Oh, yeah.
Terps losing the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament to the 4 seed out west. They will take on Grand Canyon Friday at 4:30. Pregame coverage starts at 3:30 right here on The Fan. But coming up next, we switch to the Ravens. By the way, Ronnie Stanley meeting with the media right now via Zoom. But the Ravens made a free agent signing yesterday. Bit of a surprise. But they signed a quarterback. His name's Cooper Rush. Jason has been politicking for Cooper Rush for a while. He's got something to say about it next here on The Fan. Ravens getting some work done during the offseason. This weekend, they signed a backup quarterback. We've been begging them to sign a real backup quarterback. His name is Cooper Rush. And here's what Cowboys owner and GM Jerry Jones had to say about Cooper Rush.
From the standpoint of knowing the offense, you don't lose anything. When he's in there, he can read, he can change the play at the line. You saw him doing it last night. He can get you in the right position. But more important than all of it that you're seeing is that when the chips are down or when the bullets are flying, then does he have it? Can he stand in there and make the plays at the critical times? You don't know that until you see it. Well, here he's every chance he's ever had to get in there, he does it. It tells you a lot right there.
So that's Jerry Jones. Now, this deal was originally announced at 2 years, $12.2 million. Then it was 2 years up to $12.2 million. It's really a 2-year, $6.2 million deal. The 3.1 average per year doesn't even qualify for a compensatory pick. But, Jason, we've been talking back of quarterback, and you've been talking about this guy for a few weeks now. He's now a Raven, so I see the floor.
Let's kick it up a notch with the misfits there, old Beltway Ben. Yeah, look, I hate to agree with that crazy old billionaire down in Dallas, but like, I didn't think this offense looked markedly different with Cooper Rush in over Dak Prescott. And Dak Prescott's missed a lot of time over the last 3 years. So Cooper Rush has had an opportunity to play, and he's had a chance to play under adversity, which that would be the case here in Baltimore because of expectations. It's not like he was playing somewhere where the team wasn't expected to go anywhere and where nobody cared. This wasn't Jacksonville. This wasn't Arizona. This is the Dallas Cowboys. And yeah, they're overhyped. And yeah, they're not really America's team anymore, but they're on prime time all the time. And Cooper Rush has been thrust into disadvantageous scenario after disadvantageous scenario. And I like a lot of what he's done. I mean, and even if you just compare him to Dak Prescott, like what Prescott did in the half season he played last year to Cooper Rush. Cooper Rush was better evading the rush. Cooper Rush was better at avoiding sacks. Cooper Rush had a very similar EPA per dropback to Dak Prescott. You look at other advanced statistics, explosives per dropback, they're clustered around each other. I think the kid can play, and I think he's got a little bit of ish to him in the right way. And I like the fact that he's been somewhere where the owner, who's also the GM, even if we don't think the roster is very good, he thinks they're you know, a playoff team every year, and he's not afraid to come out and say crazy stuff about his quarterback at any given time. Ask our old buddy Danucci.
Danucci was not.
He's not afraid to blame the backup quarterback for the entire season falling apart. And Cooper Rush handled all that and handled it with aplomb. Like, Cooper Rush threw the ball to wide receivers more than Dak Prescott did. Like, there's some things that he did within the confines, again, of an offense that I don't think was going to be all that great. And I'm not a big Mike McCarthy guy. I don't think he's going to do for quarterbacks anything close to what Monk can do here. But for that kind of money, I mean, I think it's a hell of a deal. He's got a lower interception percentage than Dak Prescott. Like, I mean, yards per attempt is less, but Cooper Rush was also playing part of the year with C.D. Lamb banged up, and they're running out of tight ends. It's not like he had a lot of people to throw the ball to. And, oh, remind me, how did the Dallas Cowboys run the football this year?
They were about as bad as any team in the NFL, right? Yeah.
So I like the combination of where he played, the situation he played under, what some of the advanced metrics told about him versus Dak Prescott, who, I'll remind you, Dak Prescott makes $60 million
a year. Yes, he does.
The highest paid quarterback in the NFL. I like some of who he had to play against. I like how much he's played, and I like how much younger he is than most of the rest of this group. I'm intrigued by this kid, and I think this kid, if he had to play 6 to 8 weeks, could hold down the fort and save your season.
Yeah, I think it's a win-win situation for the Ravens, where we talk a lot how they don't like spending for backup quarterbacks. It fit their price point, a little over $3 million
per year. I'll
say this,
if they gave him $5 million to six, I really wouldn't care either.
Yeah. But they can have their cake and eat it too, nice. With this contract too. And
if he plays more, he makes more.
Right, exactly. And you don't want him to play because you know what that means.
Yes.
But the Josh Johnson thing had run its course. It had to stop.
Yeah, it's run its course. And with Cooper, I mean, he came in when that season was spiraling after Dak went down and went 500 in games that he started, 4-4, and that was not a talented Dallas Cowboys team at all.
They also dropped 5% of the passes he threw at them.
He fits that mold, and I also like that they got him.
I mean, I'm reeling up.
And I also like that they made it a 2-year deal and not just a 1-year. So you can have this guy for these couple seasons. You don't have to worry about backup quarterback. We don't have to have that conversation a ton during the summer that they need to upgrade over Josh Johnson. This is that.
Here's the reality, and we all know it, and we're not going to get it twisted for you. If Lamar Jackson week two is knocked out for the year, their season's over. But if he has something where he's coming back, you need a guy like this, and they've tempted fate with this. The Josh Johnson thing, the Tyler Huntley thing, they've tempted fate with this, and it is I know it's like having insurance. You only use it when you have to. But you know what? You might come into a situation where Lamar turns his ankle and misses a month, and this guy can win two or three of those games.
I really like this signing. I'm glad they took this seriously. I think Todd Monken's going to enjoy working with this kid. I think this kid's going to love being out of that cesspool in Dallas. I look at what he has to work with here versus what he was battling with there. I don't know, man. I think this kid can be a starter in this league.
He did not embarrass himself in a bad situation in Dallas.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But he's going to play in the league for a long time. We've seen late bloomers. And I think if he works as well here as I think he's going to work with Monken and what he puts on and film in the preseason here and what he's already done in this league, you might be able to trade Cooper Rush at next, not this coming trade deadline, but the one after that, and get something pretty decent for him if you've, in the meantime, because this was going to, with 11 picks, this is not going to stop them from going after a developmental quarterback, should it.
No.
So if that kid it comes along and has two off seasons, right, this one after he's drafted, and then the one going into the 2026 season, and somebody wants Cooper Rush, and there's a run on quarterbacks, and guys are hurt, you might be able to get more for him than he's going to fetch you in a comp pick. I think he is a smart kid and a smart arm to have in their organization.
Coming up next, we stick with the Ravens, and DeAndre Hopkins met with the media on Friday, and he had something interesting to say about Ravens wide receivers. What was it? You'll hear it next here on The Fan.
A big part of my decision, obviously, you know, Lamar is, you know, known for running, but watch film, and, you know, I was watching YouTube highlights of this offense, kind of get familiar with it. You know, he makes some incredible throws, and some of the interceptions, you know, as a receiver, you know, you got to take responsibility yourself. So Lamar is, man, he knows how to thread the needle. So I think for myself, that was definitely a big part of the decision.
DeAndre Hopkins meeting with the media on Friday, talking about his decision to come with the Ravens and watching the Hots. And just to let you know, Lamar Jackson threw for 4,100 yards and only four interceptions, 41 touchdowns, 119.6 passer rating. But if I'm going to be reading into what DeAndre Hopkins said, like, his numbers should have been much better, because we talked about during the season, Jason, it seemed like all four of his picks were not his fault.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked last week about what this guy brings and why they like to have individuals with certain skill sets and certain levels of expertise at this particular position. And it would be easy for, like, Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman and a lot of these guys to be feeling good about themselves, as they should. But there's a whole nother level to sort of your professionalism and your expectations and what this guy has accomplished in the league year over year over year over year, and all that he's experienced and taken in through his career and through the careers that he's witnessed through the length and breadth of his career. And there are different levels to this and different levels of accountability and things of veterans willing to say that a second, third, fourth year guy aren't. And I heard that clip and was... I love it. I mean, I thought that's exactly the level of expertise that they should be aspiring to. That's that is sort of the next level critique and commentary that not many people in that room outside of DeAndre Hopkins would be in a position to speak to. They have let the quarterback down at times, and the running of the wrong routes, and, you know, some of the drops that can happen, and when you're in an option route and the quarterback sees it the right way and you see it the wrong way, you know, that's on you. And the public and the announcers and everybody else, the stat sheet, you know, they could look at Lamar and put it on Lamar, but we got to know better. We got to be better. And there are mistakes that we can eliminate. There are mistakes that we can take out of our game so that this quarterback's able to put even more points on the board. We're able to keep possession of the ball and keep doing our thing. I mean, True Media credited Lamar with 2.1% of his throws being turnover worthy. For a guy who makes as many off-script, low-percentage throws as he makes, that's a pretty low number. I'd also say the flip side to this is he did get away with some stuff last year.
Well, the Cleveland game is a great example, yeah. The one in Cleveland.
I mean, True Media credits it with 6 dropped interceptions. It's a lot. And some of those were on option routes where the guy ran the wrong way or didn't see it like Lamar. And some of those where Lamar threw some jump balls that should have been picked.
And that's where I see this as it balances out. Because you look at the 4 interceptions that he did throw, the one against the Raiders, it went through Bateman's hands. He threw one against Washington and went through Andrews. The pick against the Steelers where the linebacker took it away from Justice Hill. And then that option route in that second Steelers game that you're mentioning, Jason, in the red zone where Bateman stopped running, Lamar threw it to his spot, and it was intercepted.
And Monk went nuts in the coach's booth.
Yes, he did. I think... Yeah, it's all that is something that they value in this wide receiver room. We've seen it time and time again with these veteran receivers that have been through everything. He's got almost 13,000 career yards. So, yeah, it's going to help those young wide receivers who both are coming off really, really good years. Zay, first Raven wide receiver selected to the Pro Bowl. Bateman, 9 touchdowns, which more touchdowns than the rest of his other years combined and then some.
Jason, this is a small sample because it's the first time we got to hear DeAndre Hopkins speak as a Raven. But it feels like he knows the assignment.
He gets it. Well, he's telling you right here.
Yeah, he's like
it's a new sheriff in town, guys, and like we're going to hold ourselves to what might feel like an impossible standard, and if we fall short of that, so be it. But that is the standard. And I know I just got here, but they're not just bringing me in here to be in, you know, third down and red zone sub packages. They're bringing me in here to bring a little something different to the room, and I'm gonna, you know, I'm comfortable enough in my own skin. I've done enough in this league, and he knows that they respect him enough that he can come in here without everyone catching a pass on a jugs gun before a practice and speak that openly and candidly about what he saw on film on guys playing for a team that he's never been their teammate before.
He is here to win a Super Bowl, and he will do it by any means necessary. It's not him going for 1,500 yards like it was 5, 6, 7 years ago. It's the stuff off the field. It's in the film room with Zay and Bateman and others. The leadership aspect, along with the red zone, along with those big money third downs.
Well, that was the other part, listening to him on Friday, is that while he's not going to tell you that he's close to washed up by any stretch, he understands he's not the guy he was, say, in Houston 6 years ago, who's going to catch 100 balls for 1,500 yards. He knows that's not who he is anymore.
Yeah, him signing the contract he signed as quickly as he signed it tells you everything you need to know about what his priorities were in this free agency go around, about his understanding of who's ahead of him in the pecking order in terms of their abilities and talents at this stage of their career. And it clearly is it's about winning in the playoffs, playing with a great quarterback, being a part of a franchise that has a winning tradition. Obviously he had a kind of fight and claw to get out of one where nobody was really winning. And then he went to one and got a huge bag where nobody wins. And since then, it's kind of been about trying to finish on a high note and win one more game than his team did last year.
Ravens just finished up a press conference. Ronnie Stanley meeting with the media via Zoom. We'll hear from him tomorrow as he talks about returning to the Ravens. But coming up next, we switch to baseball. And Orioles are playing the Red Sox spring training game. They've taken a 5-3 lead, if you care about those things. But interesting week last week as we were the aftermath of the Grayson Rodriguez situation, who, by the way, is scheduled to play catch tomorrow, Grayson Rodriguez. But we look back. We heard from former GM Dan O'Dowd, former pitching coach Leo Mazzoni, their thoughts on the Grayson Rodriguez situation, and we discuss next here on The Fan.